One of the ways in which metabolic pathways are represented in textbooks is shown here, with a series of horizontal arrows representing a series of enzyme-catalyzed reactions. In this, the starting molecule, which we call A, it could be a sugar like glucose, is converted by the first enzyme into the product B. Then compound B is converted by the second enzyme into its product C. Then C is converted by the third enzyme into compound D. And then finally D is converted by the last enzyme in the series into the end product E. In this way, we can get almost 100% conversion of the starting molecule A to the end product E, a very efficient process. Now, there are two terms, endergonic and exergonic, which are often applied to metabolic reactions, and one way of looking at them is to say that, first of all, the rate of a biochemical reaction is dependent on the presence of an enzyme and the amount of an enzyme, whereas the direction of a reaction is dependent on the property of the chemical molecules themselves. A useful way of describing the energy changes during a reaction is on an energy profile diagram like the one here. We can use this to describe the conversion of a complex molecule such as glucose to its end products, carbon dioxide, represented here by A, the sugar, and B, the end product, carbon dioxide. In this diagram, along the horizontal axis at the bottom, the x-axis, we can plot the progress of the reaction. This is not really a time course, it's more a way of describing the beginning and the end of the reaction. On the vertical y-axis, we've plotted the internal energy of the molecule, in which we include not only the energy of the covalent bonds, but also resonance and vibrational energy of the molecule. Because glucose is a complex molecule, we've shown it as having a relatively high internal energy, whereas the end product, carbon dioxide, represented as B here, has a much lower final internal energy. So let's see what's happening during this reaction. When glucose is converted to carbon dioxide, to break the bonds in the molecule, a small amount of energy has to be put in first to strain the first bonds. So the energy is raised to a slightly higher level, the transition states, represented by this hump or this barrier in the diagram. Then once the first bond is strained or broken, then the reaction proceeds smoothly and the molecules of A are converted to the end product B. Now the distance between the starting value of energy of A and the height of the transition state is represented by that first arrow there, and that's known as the activation energy, sometimes written as capital E subscript A or as delta G hash. The difference between the starting energy value and the final energy level of the end product B is shown by the second and larger of the arrows, and that's known as the free energy change of the reaction, represented here as minus delta G, meaning that there's been a release of energy because the end product B has a lower internal energy. Now you'll notice that the value of the first arrow, that first energy change, can be diminished in the presence of an enzyme, and that's shown by the blue dotted line. The presence of an enzyme as a catalyst can lower the transition energy barrier of the reaction. But the second of those two values, the second arrow, the delta G value, is an inherent property of the molecules themselves, and that cannot be changed by the presence of an enzyme. The other thing to add is that the bigger the energy drop between the starting molecule A and its end product B, the bigger that energy drop, the less likely it is that the molecules can go in the reverse direction, because it's difficult to put a sufficient energy into compound B for it to overcome that energy barrier to be converted back to A. So the bigger the energy drop, the larger the value of delta G, then the less likely it is that that reaction can go in the backwards direction. In a metabolic pathway, there will be a mixture of enzyme reactions, some steps where the enzyme is capable of catalyzing the reaction in either direction, and that's shown by the double arrows pointing in either direction, And some enzyme steps where the free energy change is so large that the reaction can only go in one direction, and that's shown by the single-headed arrow. Typically, in a metabolic pathway, the first enzyme step is often one that appears to be irreversible, and that's because many metabolic pathways start off with an activation step, perhaps the addition of a phosphate to the starting molecule or the introduction of a high energy bond, and this makes the first reaction often irreversible, unidirectional, and one that interestingly is often regulated in some complex manner by external factors outside the cell. Let's look now at the way in which the rate of an enzyme reaction can be speeded up or slowed down within the cell. And there are several examples that we can discuss here. The simplest way of altering the rate of a reaction is to increase the concentration of the substrate or the availability. And one way of doing that is to increase the rate at which the sugar is transported into the cell by increasing the number of transporter proteins in the cell membrane. A slower response to requirements of the cell is to change the amount of the enzyme, that's the amount of enzyme protein present in the cell, by increasing the rate of transcription from the gene for that enzyme into messenger RNA. Increasing the rate of transcription to make more protein is known as upregulation or induction. Slowing down the rate of transcription is known as downregulation or repression of the gene. There are other mechanisms for altering the activity of enzymes that are already synthesized and folded and present within the cell. Some of the examples are shown on the next slides. One very important way of altering the activity of enzymes is to switch the protein from an inactive to an active form of the enzyme. This is usually achieved by the presence of yet another enzyme, which works on the inactive form of the protein, adds a covalent group to its structure, which then switches the enzyme to its active form. The best example of this kind of covalent change is where the inactive form of the enzyme has either a serine or a threonine or a tyrosine group on its surface. These three amino acids have a hydroxyl group as part of their side chain. In the inactive form of the enzyme, the amino acid is unmodified. In the presence of another enzyme called a protein kinase, which uses ATP to carry out the reaction, a phosphate group from the ATP molecule is transferred onto the hydroxyl group to give the active form of the enzyme, which now has this phosphate group with its two negative charges. So one can imagine the presence of two extra charges is likely to cause a small change in the folding of the protein, and we can imagine that this somehow exposes the active site of the enzyme by a subtle rearrangement of the amino acids. The process has to be reversible, and therefore there is in the cell another enzyme called a protein phosphatase, which is capable of taking off that phosphate group from the protein and releasing it as inorganic phosphate and converting the enzyme, the target enzyme itself, back to its inactive form. The fourth example of a mechanism for regulating enzymes is known as allosteric regulation, and we'll show more details of this on the next slide. Now, this diagram attempts to compare the properties of what we might call normal enzymes on the left with enzymes that show allosteric properties on the right. If we look on the left-hand side, most enzymes within cells have a folded structure with one active site, one region of the protein where the substrate of the enzyme can bind. If one looks at the kinetic properties of these enzymes, then as you increase the amount of the substrate, then the enzyme will show increased activity as the concentration of the substrate is increased, up to a maximum value where the enzyme is saturated with the substrate, and the shape of that curve is a rectangular hyperbola. If we look at the properties of enzymes which have allosteric properties, then these are enzymes which, when they're folded up, have more than one binding site. They have a binding site for the substrate, that's the active site where the catalytic function of the enzyme takes place. But these enzymes also have one or more other binding sites with different shapes from the active site, and these are sites where other metabolites in the cell can bind, often cofactors. Many enzymes have both an inhibitory site, as shown at the bottom of that diagram, where a triangle is shown interacting with the binding site, and an activating site, where a half moon shape is seen approaching the enzyme. These enzymes have very interesting structures in that the binding of inhibitors or activating molecules at sites on the protein which are different from the substrate binding site, binding of molecules to these other sites can influence the folding of the enzyme near the binding site for the substrate and subtly alter the catalytic activity. If we look at the kinetic properties of allosteric enzymes, and as you increase the amount of substrate, there's not a rectangular hyperbola response, but instead a sigmoid or S-shaped responsive curve, so that low amounts of substrate often have very little effect, and then there's a fairly rapid increase in activity as the amount of substrate increases. This slide is just a reminder of the fact that for metabolic pathways to proceed effectively, there needs to be three types of molecules present. There needs to be the fuel molecules, that's the sugars or the fat molecules that take part in the reactions, and at the start of the reaction these are known as substrates. As the metabolites are changed further during the enzyme reactions, they're often known as intermediates of the pathway until they're finally converted to the end products. Metabolic pathways require enzyme catalysts to speed up the reactions, and some of the reactions also need cofactors. And we can divide cofactors really into two classes of molecules. There are activating ions that are needed by some enzymes, which require magnesium ions, zinc ions, or chloride ions for the enzyme to show full activity. These usually just stabilize the protein structure. But there's another class of molecules, organic molecules, which are defined as coenzymes or prosthetic groups. And these are covalent groups, often related to the B classes of vitamins, that take part in the reaction and are often very tightly bound to the enzyme protein structure. We've already seen some examples of enzyme cofactors. We've discussed the way in which ATP acts as a cofactor and provides the energy that drives various reactions in the forward direction by being broken down to ADP and inorganic phosphate, and that releases about 31 kilojoules of energy per mole. ATP often acts as the high energy cofactor for driving processes in the cell which we could describe as mechanical events, such as pumps in membranes, transporters, contractile events, and movement. There are other cofactors which have specialized roles for driving other processes in the cell. The other examples we can mention here are the high energy nucleotides, which again contain three phosphate groups joined by acid anhydride links, but the purine part of the molecule differs in its structure. Uridine triphosphate, abbreviated as UTP, is such a high energy cofactor, and that's usually specifically involved in reactions involved in the synthesis of complex sugars, such as the synthesis of glycogen in liver and skeletal muscle. Another cofactor, GTP, standing for guanosine triphosphate, is specifically involved in reactions for the synthesis of proteins and helps drive these reactions in the forward direction. This is the structure of GTP, guanosine triphosphate. Just to show its similarity to the structure of ATP, the only way in which it differs from ATP is that it lacks the amino group at position 6 at the top of the ring structure, where it has an oxygen as a keto group, and instead the amino group of the guanine nucleotide part is there present as an amino group at position 3 in the ring structure. But in the same way that ATP is hydrolyzed at the acid anhydride links, so GTP can be hydrolyzed by specific enzymes involved in protein synthesis to give the two products inorganic phosphate, shown at the bottom of the diagram on the left, and the GTP minus that phosphate group, that will be guanosine diphosphate, produced as the other end product of the reaction.